This is CliffCentral.com. 360 Biz on CliffCentral.com.
It is 360biz.com. My name is Dabahuma Fodi. Welcome to another exciting installment of 360 Biz right here on Cliff Central. If ever you've just joined in, you are definitely dialed in to the right station. Definitely, you must tell your families and friends to definitely listen up, because I know that I'm excited about today's discussion. I mean, we're talking about something that is very close to my heart and definitely something that affects everyday person. Speaking of affecting everyday person, one thing that I've realized in life that is interesting is that we could be a professional, you could be somebody who's in poverty or anything. There's one thing that makes all of us common. There's one thing that brings us all together at the end of the day, after hustling, after going to that interview, or even for that matter, after going to the street to beg. If ever you are a beggar, it's the roof on top of our heads. You know, that's why definitely today we're talking property and definitely having roofs over our head, because that's one thing that definitely is common between all of us. I'm definitely excited that in studio I've got people that they do this for a living. You know, they live property, they live houses, they live you know what, you know, this thing that we're definitely talking about. And you know, to some of you it might be something that, obviously, these are the discussions that I know that we hardly have, especially within the round tables in our families. And these are the discussions that we need to have, these are the discussions that we need to start, you know, engaging on. Because obviously, being young professionals as well, I'm sure we want, the minute you start working, you think to myself, if I can get that car that I want and get that house that I want, and definitely, and I know that right now we've got somebody as well in studio that specializes when it comes to the market of, you know, first time owners. But I thought, you know what, let me have them in studio and let's just have a conversation and have discussion, talk anything and everything that comes to the mind, definitely that affects an everyday person. I'm very excited that you know, I've got a gentleman here in studio. I've known about him, but I've never had an opportunity to meet him until I think we're in Cape Town. That, you know what, the minute I saw actually when we had gone for the SAPOA conference, that he was one of the nominees, I just knew that, no, he's going to take this award. I remember I tweeted him to say, dude, congratulations in advance. You know what, I know you're going to take this. He says, no, but look at the people in the category. There's no way that I'm going to take this up. But for me, he stood out for me particularly, because you know, being obviously in property, we do a lot of read ups and stuff. So I happened to come across an article that he had written. So you realize that there's people that are just writers, but there's people that live this. So for me, it's something that I picked up to say, in his style of writing, it's something that definitely that's very close to his heart. And it's something that is very close to him. So, but I said to him, no, I want to discuss him. He says, no, let's discuss property. I thought maybe let's just as well bring him in and actually celebrate him before maybe I actually get, because I'm sure you might be wondering, who is this person that you're talking about, or these people that you're talking about? Let me, in fact, not ruin the introduction. I had planned this introduction to say, this is how I want to introduce them, but I think it's better off if it comes from the horse's mouth. Let me take this opportunity to welcome my guest. Thank you for coming to studio. I know that definitely we're going to have a lot of fun. And more than anything, this is a show that is very insightful, informative, and more than anything, having fun in what we do. Maybe let me take this opportunity to bring in my first guest in studio. Do you want to take this opportunity to say hi to our listeners? Tell us who you are and what is it that you do.
Hi, Dabaho. That was a good introduction, I must say. I'm under a lot of pressure here. But thank you so much for having me this afternoon. My name is Ray Mahlaka, and I am a property journalist at MoneyWeb. We look at, or specifically to my role at MoneyWeb, is to look at South Africa's real estate market, whether it's home ownership in South Africa, whether it's investing in property shares, or public proposals or public policy matters when it comes to the ownership of property in South Africa. So those are the three spheres that I look at MoneyWeb. I'm not an expert. I always say I'm not an expert, but I'm a keen observer as to what's happening in the market. And based on my observations, then I make my opinions and hopefully inform the public about the property sector.
Yeah, no, I like that, being the keen observer. I guess definitely, I mean, we are. Welcome, Ray. And congratulations to once more on the award. People, obviously, I know they must be hearing what we're busy speaking about this award. What award did you win? Maybe do you want to tell us, maybe give us a brief background of your nomination, and what is it that it was looking at in the award that you take?
Well, the Sapore Property Journalism Awards are classified as the Oscars, if you'd like, of the property sector. And this year, I was nominated for the Property Feature Journalist of the Year. This category is about journalists who write feature articles, so usually long, in-depth articles about what's happening in the property market. And I was really up against really talented journalists, my media colleagues, who are very talented, very innovative in their articles and what they write about. And I took the award this year. It was not the first time I took an award for this category in particular. I think 2 years back, I also won this award again. And the year last year, I took the Property Journalist of the Year award. Now, that's the most coveted category in those awards.
Oh, so this award thing, it's your thing. It flows in your blood.
I wouldn't say that. You know, awards are a great recognition of what, you know, what other people think about what you do.
Okay.
There's a huge risk, unfortunately, in journalism that if you do win an award, it tends to go to people's heads. And I always say that when you win an award, now people expect a lot out of you.
Yeah. But I'm sure you grow in value as well, eh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That I cannot dispute. But people now expect you to raise the bar. And for me, that's the nerve-wracking part about it. You know, you can never get comfortable. You can never get lazy. You always have to, you know, push it forward, as most people say. But generally, those are the accolades that I have. It really is a great honor, to be honest, to be recognized for your work, as I said. And hopefully this is not the end of it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Hopefully not. It can be the end of it, especially if you are now my associate. I always say, for you to be great, you need to be associated with greatness. So I'd like to think I'm associated with greatness, and I'm sure in reverse. So we definitely need to take it high, right?
Well, you're way too kind. You're way too kind, but no, I take it. I receive it.
No, definitely. So Ray, tell me, I mean, having, you said even 2 years ago, and, you know, so obviously, you're not new in this journalism thing, property journalism. Maybe let's go back. Where's home? Where do you come from? Did you study journalism, or is it something, or did you study property, or is it something that you just got into?
So the 20th of February 1992, that is when Ray was born, in Soweto, Dobsonville specifically. My mother was a retailer. She worked at... And it's quite sad thinking about it, because she has sort of come full circle. She's working at Stutterfords. She used to work at Stutterfords, and you now know that Stutterfords is about to shut down its doors next month. So really, born in Dobsonville, raised by a mother who worked in retail and a father who worked at Telkom. If people had problems with their phone lines, mm-hmm. he'd be the go-to guy at Telkom.
Okay.
And I have three siblings, a sister, a brother and another brother. So I'm the last born. I'm the baby of the household.
Oh, so you're the spoiled brat.
Not really. But yeah, a lot of people focus on the last born.
Okay.
They notice a last born. Mm. Unfortunately, if you're a middle child, you tend to be forgotten, which is unfortunate. Mm. Had always had a keen sense of reading, knowing what's happening around me in terms of news. So that journalism interest started from a very young age. And studied at Princess High University, at Princess High School. That was in the West Rand. And really, when I matriculated in 2009, I didn't know what to do.
Okay.
I had an interest in law and journalism. Then went on to apply at Wits University. Law school applications were closed. But journalism school, on the other hand, applications were open. So obviously, you know, you're going to go to where the applications are still taken. And I studied my degree at Wits and did a degree also at Monash University. And fast forward to me graduating and having a degree in journalism and media studies, I actually volunteered at the Citizen newspaper, meaning no salary. Mm-hmm. You just want a foot in the door, just to crack that door in. Mm. And I credit my career to a man called Theo Ebers. He was the deputy editor of the Citizen newspaper. And I sent him an email saying that I would like to work for free. I need a job opportunity. I just graduated. And he said, I'll take you in.
Hmm.
And worked on a month trial without a salary.
Okay.
And clearly he saw something because I was offered an internship a month later. And really, I really credit my career to him. Then I also worked at Business Day. I was a freelancer, so writing articles on the education sector. Then years later, I joined MoneyWeb. That's where I am now, and I'm a journalist at MoneyWeb at the moment. And I didn't have an interest in real estate. It was by accident, because they needed someone to write on the real estate sector, and I thought, okay, I'll take it up.
Okay.
And, you know, I cannot screw this up.
Yeah,
let's see what I can do. And as I say, the rest is history. It's been 4 years now at MoneyWeb, and it's really been an incredible journey.
So you actually got exposed to real estate at MoneyWeb?
At MoneyWeb. I have to credit MoneyWeb there because they were looking for someone who's going to write about the property sector, and I just happened to be the new recruit and who was delegated all matters in property. And it's been a really incredible journey, and I wake up every day and I really love what I do. And I've only started. Mm. There's a lot of things that I still want to accomplish that I haven't barely scratched the surface yet.
No, definitely. Let me come to my second guest. Ed, you said you want to take this opportunity to say hi to our listeners. Tell us who you are and what it is that you do.
Hi, my name is Sipha Mandla Mkhwanazi. I am an economist at Standard Bank. Part of what I do, my portfolio includes residential property to be specific, but generally just consumer offers. As you would know that the consumer is a very important component of the South African GDP. So at the bank, they needed someone who was going to look at that particular sector, that household sector.
So Spamantla, you're the numbers man.
Yes, I'm the numbers man. So when you make applications for purchasing your home, those applications will come to the bank. They're centralized somewhere, and I get to see those numbers, and I try to take out what the trends are.
Did you study financing?
I studied
economics. Maybe take us back. Where's home? And how what did you study? Right. And how did you get to be where you are?
Okay, it's quite an interesting one. I'm from a very small town in KZN called Escort.
Okay.
For those of you who drive for the Durban July.
Umzulu.
Yeah. One of those small towns, those by the way towns.
Okay.
On your way to Durban by the N3 there. So I studied there at Dazela High School. Matriculated there, I think it was 2005. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I put my matriculation, then I like Ray, went to vets. At vets, I actually wanted to be an actuary.
Mm-hmm.
Studied actuary for the first year of my varsity life. I studied actuarial science.
Discovered. It's like Ronaldo with the hustlers, and these are the intellects.
Yeah. Well, this is still part of a hustle.
Oh, okay.
I got introduced to economics in my first year of varsity, and I discovered that I had passion for economics.
Mm-hmm.
And then I changed, and I took economics as my subject. So I was there for 5 years. I did my master's there. So I completed my degree, an honors degree and master's degree at vets.
Mm-hmm.
Started working, but my passion was finance. So I started working as a graduate trainee for Net Group Investments in Cape Town.
Okay.
So I was an investment analyst, graduate trainee at Net Group Investments there. 6 months later, I got an opportunity to join the Competition Commission as an economist. It's completely different kind of economics. It's different from the language, from an everyday language of interest rates and what inflation is doing. It's a completely different kind of economics.
Okay.
So I was there for like 4 years until I joined the bank 2 years ago. as a property and consumer economist. And like Ray, I didn't have any prior experience in property. It just so happened that the bank was looking for someone who was going to cover that space, and that's how I got into property.
Oh, okay. No, interesting. So now, so you guys are both into property by default. So now maybe, Ray, let me come back to you on this one. Generally, like I said, her property is not our dinner, you know, table discussion, especially being black, you know. And it's something that obviously we default to. And right now we grew up being lied to. That's why I think I wanted us to have the discussion. We grew up being lied to say, no, you buy a property, you buy an investment and this and this and that, you know, for 20 years and things like that, you know. But now being in an investment game, you start realizing to say, where was the investment there? Do you understand? And things like those. So now, maybe the question that I need to pose, maybe I want your opinion and your opinion from both of you, to say, are black people in property? And if not, why are we not into this space?
Well, first of all, you know, property is something that everyone aspires to have. And I think context is quite important, especially the South African context, mm-hmm. where land ownership is such an emotional issue. But due to our history of apartheid and you know, disenfranchisement of black people in this country, I think there is now more awareness of the challenges when it comes to home ownership, in that you need a high deposit.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you need to be able to afford a property. But there is a keen awareness now that, you know, everyone aspires to own a property.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of black people owning a property, I would say yes. Over the years, there has been an increased level of ownership, home ownership, because banks over the past few years have sort of relaxed their lending criteria. So if
have they?
I think so.
Okay.
If you look at the level of loan extensions from the big four banks,
mm-hmm.
those levels of banks granting consumers credit, they have increased since the 2008 global financial crisis. Maybe that's the fact that banks have a more appetite to grant mortgage loans responsibly to consumers, that is. So for me, I think the biggest barrier, and not just black people, but professionals overall, in owning a property is the issue of affordability and high indebtedness of consumers. You can think about it in your salary. How much of your salary goes back home in the form of black tax or the sandwich generation, mm-hmm. if you like to glamorize mm-hmm. it? And how much do you have in terms of car payments and your lifestyle costs as well? And if you look at how much you earn, how much can you afford in terms of monthly mortgage payments? For me, affordability is a big issue, and that's what we need to overcome. The how part, I don't know, but to go back to your question, I absolutely think that there are more black players in the home ownership space.
Okay, home ownership space. Let's talk property investment.
Property investments, it you can look at it two ways. There's still a huge issue with black people believing that the GSC is for them. They view the GSC as something that's exogenous, external, far within reach.
Okay.
But I can tell you now, by the virtue of you owning a pension fund, you do have access to the GSC. In terms of owning individual property stocks, that's where I think the challenge lies. Because, first of all, you need to understand what you're getting yourself into. You need to understand the risks versus opportunities in owning individual property stocks. But by the virtue of you owning, again, a retirement annuity fund that invests in unit trusts or portfolios that may be exposed to the property sector, I'd absolutely say that black people are increasingly becoming exposed to the real estate sector on the JSE through retirement annuity funds.
Okay. So then now in terms of though, but now is there... Because right now, one of the most I've met an opportunity of engaging and meeting a couple of, let's say, black property developers and property investors and the likes. So one of the key consistent thing, it's capital. you know, and you've liked, there's the likes of who's the CEO for the Billion Group?
Sisa
Ngebulan. Yes, you know that as well. Who has shared his insight and in terms of how the industry has been monopolized, and how he was, attacked, not only attacked, but in fact was actually, how do I put it? Structured for failure into what he was trying to establish, you know, being the group. Okay, good thing now they're running entering a fund that is listed and everything of that kind. So, but now it goes to show that obviously not everyone has the kind of balls that he has, not everyone has the kind of deep pocket that he has and the kind of networks that he has. So now I want us to speak to an ordinary person on the street that wants to get to this. The good thing, we've got the likes of TEF now that are investing into emerging property developers. We've got the likes of GPF and many others. But now, obviously, people still view it as this horse, not really this horse, this bull, that, you know what, it's going to be hard to actually engage or actually be part of. So now, I mean, for somebody or a person like that, how do you simplify them getting into the space?
I think those concerns, first of all, are very valid, because property is quite a capital intensive industry.
Mm-hmm.
Hence why we see very few black players or very few black emerging players, and the lack of And the capital-intensive nature of property,
mm-hmm,
has also led to concerns about why is the property industry so slow to transforming.
Okay.
You look at the boards of many property companies, they're still pale and male.
Definitely.
You know, even though BE structures have been set up, whereby a company would give a portion to an empowerment fund or a consortium of black, mm-hmm, investors, getting the capital to buy the equity into that BE structure, you know, it's a lot of money, first of all.
Yeah.
And I'm probably going to disappoint you in saying the solution or the how, I don't know, to be honest. But I do think we need a new way of rethinking the model of funding small and emerging entrepreneurs, whether it's providing capital with low interest rates, for example, or I don't know, just providing the capital with little hindrance or barriers to the small, you know, emerging entrepreneurs, just to make, you know, to free up the capital that is much needed. Government has a huge role to play. And unfortunately, there is a view that government is not coming to the party,
mm-hmm,
in assisting, you know, emerging entrepreneurs to get into the property game as well. Those concerns are very valid, and I believe that's the case too. But I really think we need to look at a new way of funding emerging entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know in South Africa that we do need entrepreneurs. They are the ones that carry the can for job creation in this country, whereby the private sector and government is unable to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that the regulatory environment for small businesses is very tough. You know, it takes so many days to register a business in this country, whereas globally, the times and days are very shorter. So I think we need to overhaul our approach and the way we relook at SMEs and really make it easy for them to operate.
And you made mention of BE deals and transactions and the likes. So you've been a property journalist for the last 4 years. In all honesty, do you see transformation though taking place, or do you see people benefiting out of these BE deals? Because for me, from what I've seen, they just people just get good lawyers, good accountants, and structure smart. Structures to actually seem like BE, seems like transformation, but it's not actual transformation. So last time, I mean, I had an opportunity of interviewing the BE commissioner, and she even attested to the fact that it's more of a tick box exercise. And if ever in a question where a black business will be empowered in this, it will be given non-strategic services to render other than strategic and influence. What's your opinion?
I think there's a tough conversation that needs to be, a tough and frank conversation that needs to happen about the sector is very slow in terms of transforming. And if you look at the concept of transformation, there are about five pillars to transformation. There's ownership, skills development, employment equity, management and control. Mm-hmm. So when people focus on transformation, they only look at the ownership level,
yes,
which is a huge mistake in my view. You need to be able to really assess a company in terms of its transformation objectives. Is it procuring goods from small or black and emerging enterprises? You know, are they hiring and building skills within that company, mm-hmm, in terms of making certain black individuals part of management? Mm-hmm. You look at the boards of these property companies listed in the JSE, they are so male and pale focused. And, you know, for me, you're right. It is still a box ticking kind of approach, whereas we need a new way to relook at how transformation is looked at. You know, mm-hmm, we need to look at making transformation being part of, you know, wanting to make change, and uplifting the environment in which a company operates in. So there's really still a huge, you know, problem that we're facing, despite they being a legislative framework like the property charter, which actually tells you how you should achieve those transformational objectives. It seems like there isn't much will to take up that charter and implement it at all. In fact, it seems like it's ignored. So people have discussed the concept of having punitive measures for companies that are not transformed, meaning, you know, imposing a fine, mm-hmm, or other sanctions. If that's what it takes to get companies really serious about transformation, I really think we need to look at maybe punitive measures for companies that don't transform.
Mm. No, definitely. Spamandla, one of the interesting turning points that Ray mentioned earlier, it's the issue of home ownership. And obviously you are in economics in that space. And I know that you've recently released a property index. Maybe obviously to somebody else that might be listening, one, they might not know what that is, and what's the importance of doing an annual property index. Maybe before I get to the question that I want to ask you, maybe do you want to give us a brief background about that a bit?
Right. In the most simplified terms, an index just looks at house price trends in those particular areas. So what we've done is that we've taken our national house price index, which just looks at national averages, but we realized that in South Africa especially, where income levels are so dispersed, for example, if you're in Cape Town, you don't earn the same as workers in Cape Town don't earn the same as workers in Johannesburg, for example. So demand for housing in those particular areas tends to be different, and the drivers of demand are different in those areas. So that means that house prices in different areas are going to have different trends. So that's why we look at it from that perspective. Mm-hmm. But the importance of it is that over and above having a roof over your head, a house can also be a form of investment. And as a consumer out there, then you want to see how that asset of yours is growing over time.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, also taking into account the economic conditions in the country. So it really just looks at house price trends in those particular areas, taking into account the economic environment.
Mm. So now, you just said as well that a house is an investment. How is that an investment, though?
Right. So you buy a house. You can use it for different kind of things. So you buy a house. Mm-hmm. You let it appreciate over time. It's an appreciating asset. For example, say you took a mortgage on that house. Over time, as you pay off your mortgage, there is an equity that that accrues to you as an owner mm-hmm. of that house. And that equity, you can use it to buy another house. You can use it to renovate the existing house
okay.
and improve on the value of your asset.
Mm-hmm.
Or for example, if you decide to sell the house 5 years later, you can make a profit out of that. So it becomes an investment from that perspective.
Mm. Okay. So now, in regards to now new home ownership,
yeah.
Do we have a lot of black people buying houses?
We do. But I want to allude to what Ray mentioned earlier. Okay. In South Africa, we've let this dual property market persist for so long. By that I mean, you've got a large part of your population that lives in the rural areas, that lives in the townships, mm-hmm. and you've got your urban, your more formal house owners.
Okay.
Now, trends in those two different types of markets are not necessarily the same.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So what's happened is that home owners in those formal and urban areas have the title deeds. They're able to trade on the assets, mm-hmm. whereas the large majority of the population still lives in the rural areas where they don't have home ownership. They don't have a title deed behind their assets, and then they are unable to trade on their assets. So what that means then is that the large part of your population is not absorbed into the formal market. In other words, they're not able to go out there and trade on their asset. You can Trading on your asset does not necessarily mean selling it, but you can go to the bank and use your title deed as your collateral and open a spaza shop, for example. Mm-hmm. So that's homeowners in those parts of the country don't have that luxury. So we've let this dual property market persist for so long. So yes, home ownership is increasing. Black people are coming into the market, but we could be doing better. Mm-hmm. We could be doing much better.
Mm. So then, from the obviously, I'm sure the more formal market, like you mentioned, they're the ones that are now getting the second property, they're getting the third property.
Correct. Mm. Getting your first property, chances are it becomes easier to get your second property. And then you grow your portfolio from that perspective. Whereas those in those informal markets remain in those informal markets. Trade there is really survival, really. It's trading just between me and yourself on a cash basis most of the time. Mm. And you're unable to grow your assets from that perspective.
Mm. So now let's talk more of the informal market. I mean, we have a lot of people coming from the rural areas, yeah. coming to the townships, and obviously those people need accommodation. That's why right now you realize that as well, there's a lot of influx of informal settlement. There's a lot of influx, you know, turning squatters and everything else. And I understand that devalues properties as well. Mm-hmm. So, and right now, those people, other than the government having to look for them in terms of giving them alternative accommodation or RDPs or whatsoever, what role is the bank playing there?
Right. So there are two things I want to mention in that regard. I want to mention property developers, and I want to mention banks.
Okay.
Now, what's happened is that in the affordable market, which is the market you're talking about, for those that earn standard banks, by standard banks definition, those that earn less than 15,000 rands, mm-hmm. combined income. So what's happened is that property developers usually focus on the higher end of the market.
Okay.
In a way, leave these people in the affordable market with inadequate stock. Whereas that's where most of the demand is. Mm. Now, from the bank perspective, banks usually are more risk averse when it comes to those people because of affordability, as Ray mentioned. And the focus tends to be on the higher end of the market. Mm-hmm. So you've got this problem. One, inadequate stock for those people. And two, even if you did have stock, you will still have banks that are more risk averse when it comes to those people because of affordability issues.
So now, I mean, then when you look after, because that's why you see there's a rise on the rental stock.
Correct.
And right now, on when I was looking at your property index, it's more focused on new home ownership. Who's looking after the rental, stock, or who's looking after the rental index, or is it you, Ray?
No, I don't have money, first of all. I just put my money where my mouth is. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a great understanding that there is a shortage of rental stock, shortage of quality rental stock in places that are close to where people work, mm-hmm. which is very important because you don't want people traveling for many, hours to go to work. But at this point, I don't think there's a huge focus on bringing quality, affordable stock at the moment, because rental developers know they can make a lot of money by bringing higher end units to a market, that that there's really a huge demand for. I can tell you right now, where the stock is needed the most, rental stock is needed the most, is between the price category of 4,500 to the 7,500 rental per month bracket. Whereas of the stock that is coming into the market, mostly we're looking at 15,000 to 25,000.
That's true.
That's quite a high-end market, first of all. Sandton, for example, would classify as quite a high-end market. But
it is.
When you're talking about a young professional, who can really afford those kind of units? So I think we also need to relook government's housing subsidy framework, whereby I think it's called the gap market, whereby if you earn, please speak under correction, but if you earn a certain amount of salary, I think it's 7,000 rand, you get a 3,500 back subsidy. That doesn't work, because how can you classify someone as, you know, really needing that subsidy? We need to relook at how government also comes to the party as well in loosening up that home ownership level. But the long and short of it is that we do need to bring affordable rental stock to the market, because I can tell you that there's a huge demand for that stock. But developers also need to look at the market very differently too.
So, I mean, what you're making reference to, I know it's very beneficial to that government scheme to banks. Banks smile because it really helps them, you know, obviously able to roll out more houses and do this and that. Or am I lying so much?
You're very right. You're right. But what I want to say is that there's a bigger problem here, and I agree 100% with you. And I see a role for the state-owned enterprises coming into into this debate, because the debate has been of the complaints is that there isn't enough land or in access to land in urban areas.
Okay.
Now, what's that done is that even if developers want to bring into into the market affordable houses, they are usually far away from the economic opportunities, and usually in those areas, basic services aren't there, and the municipalities then have to come in. But what we found in our research is that state-owned enterprises, particularly Transnet, owns large amounts of land in around urban areas in South Africa, and that's land and buildings, and that's land and buildings that is sitting idle that could be used for
my friends in Transnet. I'm coming. I must start making friends there. Yeah.
So from my perspective, we could be using that those assets more productively. Could be using them to develop small black developers. We could be using them, could be unlocking that land for affordable homes, for the affordable homes, because it solves the problem of people living far away from where they work, having and then having to allocate a lot of their money into transport costs, and that improves productivity. It improves opportunities for people. People are, the closer they come to the working areas, they get access to better schools. They're more productive. They spend less time traveling. So it's beneficial to everyone.
Ray, in terms of now, I mean, the benefit that Spamadla is adhering to, do you see that?
Absolutely. And just to go back to his point, the problem with the state is that it is sitting on a lot of land, which unfortunately it doesn't even have record on. So we need to. The state also needs to be able to have a process that registers your land and better manages your land. Because really, how can developers partner with government if they want to roll out stock if the government can't even tell how much of land do I own, for example? That's a huge problem. But also, I feel like government also needs a carrot and stick approach to developers to say, we have the land, put your money where your mouth is to come on board and deliver these rental units. Because, and government has the levers of power by maybe saying, we'll charge you lower rates and taxes. You know, give developers a financial incentive for them to also want to bring in stock in the market. Because remember, a developer wants a return as well. I'm not going to put in my money if I know that those returns are going to be very low. So, you know, in some way, I think the government needs to create an enabling environment for developers to come on board.
Mm-hmm.
And is there an enabling environment right now? Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Hmm. So now, I mean, we Supermart, are we seeing a lot of shopping centers coming into the townships and the likes? And you've said, Hora, there's no land. But where else, when you go to the likes of Sandton, Fourways, there's no land there either. That's why you see developers build going up. And you finance or you bond those houses very gladly. You know, I mean, why, if ever, let's say, a similar thing would take place in the township, people would not develop going straight up, but would develop going up. Would you still bond to those stocks?
Yeah, no. So, how it works is that in the affordable market space, there are funds that are specifically catering for that particular market. So it doesn't really matter whether it's high-rising buildings or not, but there are funds that are particularly looking at that specific market. And I've seen banks, well, I won't mention names, I've seen banks that are taking up risks that they wouldn't take previously. I've seen banks that are funding houses in townships, in new developments in townships. So there is a change, slowly but surely, there is a change in attitude of banks towards mm-hmm. Towards funding, especially in those previously called township areas.
Mm. So now, I mean, in regards to that, you know, funds that are available. So, but now the question is as well. I don't know. Maybe let me ask Ray from a journalist perspective. How? Because you'd find as well. Even when we're at the support, people were like, guys, money is available, you know? So, but now how much of that information is out there though to the public, to the ordinary person? Because I think that's, we tend to miss that. And for me, believe me, I think I'm beyond the scale of being an ordinary person. But even me, myself, I miss on some of that information. I mean, how is it? Is it maybe dispensed to a certain elite kind of people or...
I put my journalist hat on because I am the information provider.
Okay.
Yeah, but to be honest, I doubt that you know, there is that information out there to help people when it comes to home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think also the problem, maybe journalists, myself, are not writing often about this market. But also people, there's still a misconception about how the mortgage market works. You know, a lot of people, when they go in to go apply for a mortgage, they don't realize that you do need amount of deposit in place. Sure, banks are still granting 100% mortgages, but I get a sense that those are a few and far in between nowadays.
Yeah.
Because, you know, banks also assess, you know, a consumer's risk. How much collateral are you putting forward? So I don't think there's enough information out there, to be honest. Mm. And fixing that, I'm going to cop out and say I don't know. but yeah, I think there is a greater scope to educate the reader, you know, and the consumer in particular. And just to go back to your point about, you know, property investors sitting on a lot of cash and it not being deployed or being used, I can gladly answer that question and say that it's the state of the country at the moment, the mm-hmm. worrying state of the country, whether it's, you know, economically, politically as well. Because if I see what's happening in the country as a developer with money,
mm-hmm.
Would I invest in a country whereby the political and economic climate is not that favorable at the moment? So a lot of developers are sitting with a lot of cash and they're waiting to see how the economic and politics of this country is going to go.
Mm. So, but as a bank, you need to be okay for you. The more information people have, the more you get to make money.
Correct.
So, what are you doing to take information to the people?
Right. I just wanna take on the point of information not being there. The program Ray that Ray was talking about earlier, that of FLISP, they call it FLISP, that government subsidy in the end of the market.
Mm-hmm.
It is there, But I feel like we could be doing more in getting that information out, because take up of those subsidies is so low, in such a way that one questions whether there is any benefit to this to these subsidies. So subsidies are there, but people don't know about them, and take up is really low. So I think financial institutions as a whole do need to go out there and communicate with the consumer a bit more than they are currently doing.
Are you guys going out to communicate with the consumer a bit more?
I can't speak for the bank, but the information is available on the websites of the banks.
Usually. That's not going out, but just speaking to people.
That's what I was going to say. But so at the moment, it's about the consumer going out looking for the information rather than the banks going out there and giving it to the consumer.
Yeah, no. You know, remember we said earlier, Hori, Spamala, they are the intellect one. You know, so he's got a creative way of answering. You know, no, don't worry. It's not like this is a case today where we say anything will be used against you. So you could be free to definitely answer. I think definitely. I mean, it's something that there's so much that needs to be done. So now one of the things that now you find we in an era where people are starting to as well look at alternatives. So I'll make an example. When you look at the companies like Perpetuity, I know they're doing a development using shipping containers in GP, you know, and you've got student resident that is done in that, and others now there's going the structural insulated panels. There's and what I've realized with banks, do not finance alternative. Why don't you finance alternative? Because it is still homes, right?
Yeah. So the way I say it, of course, I'm not in the department that finances. I'm just an economist that looks at numbers.
Okay.
The way I see it is that there is a bit of reluctance, especially in these economic conditions, a bit of reluctance to take a risk. Corporates in general have taken this wait and see approach. They want to see how the economy does. They want to see what turns out in the political front. So a lot of corporates in SA at the moment are afraid to take a risk, and those new innovations usually come with a risk. And I think at the moment the banks are looking at that and saying, given these circumstances, given the economic circumstances, I'm unable at this point in time to take this risk.
So, I mean, have you explored a lot of alternatives in your writing in the last 4 years that is coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you touched on the idea of a shipping container, and I know that there's a retail building in Melville.
Oh, 27
boxes, yeah. That uses that kind of innovations. And the same company that owns that mall delivered student housing, student accommodation using shipping containers in downtown Johannesburg. So for us as MoneyWeb, and for my personal interest, absolutely, I'm keen about exploring alternative solutions in terms of providing real estate, and I believe those innovative solutions are quite affordable from a developer's perspective.
Yeah.
They don't cost as much as bringing a bricks and mortar establishment, for example. But I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because banks are nervous about, you know, funding those kind of innovations, because there hasn't been much track record in South Africa as to how those innovations are done, you know, the various costs that are associated, whether the market is actually keen for those kind of offerings. So I completely understand why banks would be taken aback to back these sort of innovations. But based on me interacting with the market, I think in South Africa there's a huge appetite for those alternative forms of housing and having a roof over your head.
So then, Ray, I've followed a couple of your articles. Why isn't the property market writing a lot on township opportunities and the market as a whole? You'd find that usually in reports that you know, developers, that is the retail developers mainly that would do it. They look at it from a retail perspective, other than from a rental, from a residential perspective. Why is that though?
I think, you know,
where else most population comes from the township. You know, those retailers in the township, there's some of them, they're making so much money than retailers in town.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, I'm partly at fault for that. And I'll tell you why. Because it was a period of 2005 up until 2009. That was a significant period where people were starting to understand townships and the township economy and what people wanted in townships. Hence why we saw the big malls going up in Soweto, the likes of Maponya Mall, Jablani Mall, because we finally got an understanding of the economic fundamentals of how township works and the undersupplied nature of how townships work. There was greater or even heightened awareness about the township. Mm-hmm. That has seemed to slow down. And why it has slowed down, I don't understand. Is it because maybe there is much greater economic activity outside of the townships into our outlying areas or cities, for example?
Yeah.
But what would it take for us as journalists to cover the township economy? I think we are covering the township economy, and I'll tell you why. I'm sure you know about the Competition Commission's grocery retail sector inquiry, whereby they are looking at competition dynamics between big retailers such as your Pick n Pay and your local's parcel shops. Mm-hmm. That inquiry is still ongoing. And I've been covering that inquiry. And what has unraveled is that there are definitely anti-competitive behaviors that a lot of big retailers, you know, do in the townships, whereby a lot of their pricing strategy of merchandise, for example, is squeezing a lot of township spaza shops and local entrepreneurs. So I do think that there is still a large, greater scope of coverage of what happens in townships. But maybe that's maybe distracted also by what's happening in the city as well.
But now you see, you went from the angle that I covered to say if it gets covered, it would cover it from a retail perspective side of things. What about a residential perspective? I mean, Spamanta is financing properties in the township, and there's an activity taking place there.
Also, and I speak for myself as MoneyWeb. I can't speak on behalf of my media colleagues.
Okay.
But we do cover house price growth in the townships, for example. I can tell you I've written articles about how property prices in Jablani, for example, have fared, in the sense that the house price growth in Jablani, for instance, 2 years ago was outstripping your major suburbs in Johannesburg.
Is it?
Yes.
No, I'd like to see that. Yeah. Please send me those links.
And the problem is that not a lot of people reevaluate their properties and townships. You know, they don't know how much capital appreciation, you know, their properties do amass. But I can tell you for sure that 2 years ago in Jablani, I was astounded. Also that, you know, I don't know what the state of play is right now.
Right, that's 2 years ago. A lot has happened from 2 years ago to now.
Yeah. It is quite an active sector, I can be honest, from a listed property or real estate sector. Mm. But I like the challenge that you brought to me right now, that, you know, you're absolutely right, and I'll cop out to that. We don't focus much of what happens in the townships, and we fall into the trap of focusing largely on what happens on the listed property side.
Mm. Yeah. No, definitely, because I mean, there's in the township, there's a whole lifestyle thing, and I'm sure Spamanda, you would know that there's a lot of people that obviously you would finance, I mean, for building costs. I mean, there's mansions that are in the townships now, and there's a whole lot of, you know, activity. There's people that are just comfortable staying in the township. They can afford to stay in Sandton, but don't want to stay in Sandton.
Correct.
They want to be in town.
Correct. An interesting statistic of the research that we recently did, where we measured incomes of people that buy in Soweto versus people that buy in town, actually found that people who buy in Soweto actually earn more than people who buy in Johannesburg.
Serious?
Correct. There are people that would just prefer.
Please send me that statistic.
I'll clearly do that. There are people who just prefer that lifestyle in the township, and it has become a very active hub. Townships have become active hubs in SA at the moment.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, one thing I hate about time is when you're having a good time, it's when it decides to fly. You know, it's like you could just absolutely hold it. So maybe, obviously, in closing, is there something maybe that you want us give us as a point of closure?
Sure. I just want to touch on the point on township property. Of the things I've seen is that houses, they are not necessarily viewed as a source of investment, as a form of investment. In the township, it's largely just putting a home or getting a home. So when you write about what's happening in Jablani, for example, you would find that, well, maybe interest is not going to be so much because houses are not viewed just as homes and not as an investment. So that's one of the attitude that that still needs to change, and I think it comes with informing our people.
Yeah. So now for people that want to go through in detail some of the property index and some of the research that you've done, where can they find that?
It's available on our website, standardbank.co.za.
Okay. My brother, what's your point of closure?
Economic opportunities need to move to townships and rural areas. In that way, people don't need to feel the pressure of moving out of the township. And if, you know, townships are economically active, then developers will follow and bring more stock, rental and housing stock that is better suited and appropriate for people that live in the townships. If we can change that, I think we're going to have a huge knock-on impact when it comes to housing, home ownership in South Africa.
So for people that want to follow some of your articles, where can they get hold of them?
Simple, www.moneyweb.co.za.
And people that want to follow you?
On Twitter at Ray Mahlaka.
Okay, are you on Twitter?
Not active, but it's Sipa underscore Mkwanazi.
Sipa underscore Mkwanazi. Okay, no, thanks a lot, gentlemen, for coming in studio. I know definitely I'm going to bring you guys back. You know, you might not be together and when I bring you back, but obviously to get more into a more detailed discussion with at least some of the insight. I've got no doubt that people have really benefited from the conversation that we had. We're hoping that even when we send through that invite, you'll be able to honor it for us. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
No, definitely. This is indeed what we had for you today right here on Cliff Central. If you just tuned in, you missed out on an exciting discussion that we had around properties in the property market, whether being a township, whether being town, and whether being a first-time buyer. But you can always go to www.cliffcentral.com. and go to podcast to actually enjoy or get hold of the podcast. You can even download the Cliff Central app to actually listen to some of the podcasts that we had. This is all that we had for you today. Catch us again next time for another exciting installment of 360 Bears. My name is Debo Homafodi. I'm out.
This is CliffCentral.com.